Good evening. My name is Herb, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to our final workshop on the 12th tradition. Please join me in the prayer for an open mind. God, please set aside everything that I think I know about myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and you, for an open mind and a new experience with myself, my brokenness, the 12 traditions, and especially you. This is the foreword to the pamphlet, AA Tradition, How It Developed, by Bill Wilson, published in 1955. How shall we AAs best preserve our unity? When an alcoholic applies the 12 steps of our recovery program to his personal life, his disintegration stops and his unification begins. The power, which now holds him together in one piece, overcomes those forces which had rent him apart. Exactly the same principle applies to each AA group and to Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole. So long as the ties which bind us together prove far stronger than those forces which would divide us if they could, all will be well. We shall be secure as a movement. Our essential unity will remain a certainty. May we never forget that without permanent unity, we can offer little lasting relief to those scores of thousands yet to join us in their quest for freedom. It is the purpose of this workshop to review and discuss each of the 12 traditions so we may better understand and apply them to our fellowship and to our personal lives. Please join me in a few minutes of meditation on that purpose. That is why we're here. Please join me in the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. We are here to talk about our second legacy, unity, and to review the 12 traditions. Crosstalk is allowed in a loving and supportive manner. To be informed and helpful are our only goals. And as I mentioned, this is the final workshop in the series of 13, the first being an orientation. They have all been recorded, they will be edited, and they will be available through the recording person, Dave, who has recorded all of our material. And how could they find that, Dave?
12steptapes.com.
12steptapes.com.
There's a Herb Kagan tab.
There's a Herb Kagan tab. I should look at that. All right. All right. So they'll be on there and available through Dave's company. Short form, 12th tradition. Anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, ever reminding us to place principles before personalities. Long form. And finally, we of Alcoholics Anonymous believe that the principle of anonymity has an immense spiritual significance. It reminds us that we are in to place principles before personalities, that we are actually to practice a genuine humility. This to the end that our great blessings may never spoil us, that we shall forever live in thankful contemplation of Him who presides over us all. So I have some comments from my preparation reviewing. As we talked about last time, we have two traditions that are focused on the subject of anonymity. So what distinguishes the 11th from the 12th tradition? My sense is, and we talked about it last time and we'll talk about it today, the 11th tradition is about my relationship to the organization. Anonymity in terms of my membership in a variety of ways and implications. The 12th tradition is about my relationship to myself and my relationship to the community in anonymity as a spiritual foundation manifested through humility. And we'll be talking about that today. Not necessarily in relationship to the organization Alcoholics Anonymous, although obviously there's a lots of crossover there. And we talked at length about anonymity at the public level. 100% anonymity at the public level. No face, no name. Anonymity by its absolute strictest definition. Public level, meaning press, radio, television, and film. Public level does not mean in a public audience, unless, of course, there's a reporter there or a camera there. If there is no reporter and no camera, you can address Congress and tell them that you're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. Now, of course, there's reporters and cameras there, but I just wanted to make the point. So Tradition 12 is a very deep spiritual principle for personal spirituality. It's about our attitude toward the world, toward our relationship with God, toward our relationship with people, in the sense of no uniqueness. And we talked about the mental image of the beach of Santa Monica, where there's trillions of grains of sand, none of them standing out. That's kind of the mental image. The 12 traditions are the specific application of the 12 steps. What a wonderful concept. This is a condensation of all of the reading that you've done and I've done in preparing ourselves for tonight's discussion. The application of the 12 steps in our relationships with AA as a whole, with AA groups and other groups, and with society, our community. The 12 traditions overall are the application of the 12 steps. Big picture, big context. Now we're going to narrow it down. The 12 traditions, like the steps, make us whole in our relationship with God, in our relationship with ourselves, and with the relationship with the world, our community. Wholeness, unity. That's how it started out with Tradition 1. And that, of course, is the purpose of the 12 steps. That transformation, reintegration with our true self through an authentic relationship with the higher power, with the true self, capital T, capital S. In the same way, the spirit of anonymity is the foundation of the traditions. Anonymity, the foundation of the traditions, in the same way that powerlessness is the foundation of each step. Not just the first step. Those of you who have gone through the step workshop know that I emphasize, of course, step one is about powerlessness, but steps 2 through 12, the foundation of them, are powerless. In step 2, we're powerless to adequately name God. In step 3, we're powerless to adequately make a decision to have a relationship with God. In step 4, we're powerless to adequately really discern and see and accept all the obstacles in our relationship, and therefore in resentment there's a prayer, in fear there's a prayer, in sex there's a prayer. In the final analysis, etc., through the balance of the steps. In the same way, powerlessness is the foundation of the steps, each step. Anonymity is the foundation of all and each of the traditions. There's a promise of privacy, a phrase from one of the readings, a promise of privacy. No names, no uniqueness, no image, no recognition. There's also the principle of equality, a principle of equality, especially in the structure of Alcoholics Anonymous or in the group of Alcoholics Anonymous. All right? There is no authority except the underlying spirit that is manifest through the group conscience. All of this is for the intent of fostering humility. I love this definition that came out of some of the readings. Humility, being teachable. And we've talked about humility before as coming from the Latin word humus, which means earth or dirt or sand on the beach, common as humility. And it's best expressed in the tradition, this tradition itself, which says principles before personalities. That's the final sort of suggestion I make when I'm having conversations with people about direction and action. Figure out what the principle is and operate on principle, and always take the high road. Operate on principle and always take the high road. It's never not served me. Anonymity means, quote, giving up. And we've talked about sacrifice before in the step work. Bill has a line in the big book on page 14 that connotes the deflation of the ego at depth that is the work of the steps. Simple but not easy. A price had to be paid. It means the destruction of self-centeredness. My goodness, really? That's gentle. Really, the destruction of self-centeredness. Thomas Merton, one of my teachers, dead, of course, but, well, he died in 1968, not necessarily, of course, but he's a teacher. And he said, meditation is the combustion chamber of the ego. Don't you love it? Meditation is the combustion chamber of the ego. A continuation of that deflation of ego at depth. We give up, sacrifice, sacere, facere, the Latin for holy and to make whole, to make holy, to make sacred, to give up the self-centeredness. Michael.
Does that, Merton quote, does that mean that the fire is the destructive force of the ego? I mean,
no, it's the fire of the love of God is probably what he means.
It's meaning that that's what destroys the ego.
That's what dismantles the false self. Yeah. Be careful when we're talking about ego, because that's what the psychologists and psychiatrists get paid a lot of money to help rebuild in you, is healthy ego, in contrast to unhealthy ego, false self, true self. The true self is what we're born with. And we immediately begin like crustacean, you know, accumulating the false self as a survival barrier, a mechanism, a mask, a persona. What do we give up? Personal desires the desire for the common good, for the common welfare. We give up the personal ambition in favor of the common good and common welfare. So the focus is on the message, not the messenger. Hello? The focus is on the message, not the messenger. I pick it up from the readings. I didn't make this stuff up. It's brilliant. Light versus lantern. The fellowship versus personalities. It's interesting that Bill, in the 12th tradition, uses the same, almost same terminology as he used in his autobiography in the big book that I just quoted. Simple but not easy, a price has to be paid. It meant the destruction of self-centeredness. This is from page 14. We must turn in all things to the Father of Light who presides over us all. The steps are the turning to have a relationship with God in step 3, and then identify and remove everything that's in the way of that relationship, steps 4 through 10, and then to foster it, steps 11 and 12. Well, in the 12th tradition, he ends the 12th tradition by saying, live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. exactly the same wordings. He has this mystical vision of the transcendence of the of God, of the higher power. The tradition 12, anonymity is the spirit of humility at work. Anonymity, as a practice, is the spirit of humility, the practice of humility. We're giving up personal distinction. In AA, we'll talk about that tonight specifically. How do you address yourself in AA? Do you use your first name? Do you use your first name and initial? Do you use your first name and last name? There's not a controversy, but there are two camps of thought. Not surprisingly, one from Akron and one from New York. and the spirit of humility at work in the community. All right? But Bill's very clear, and the literature is very clear, and General Service is very clear, that you all, each of you, are the only deciders of how much anonymity you want, with only one exception, and that's at the public level. At the non-public level, you decide how anonymous you want to be. Anonymity is the foundation or the key. Once again, they use that wonderful spiritual image, poetic image, of a protective mantle, a spiritual mantle, anonymity that protects our unity, that cloak over our fellowship, that cloak over each individual that protects our unity, the anonymity. Within the person, within the self, personal anonymity. Outside of myself at the public level. And that life force of all of this, just like the steps is the, Bill calls them, we practice these principles in all our affairs. He's talking about the steps. Here we're talking about the principles underlying each of the traditions. That's why we refer at the end of each workshop to the worksheet we have on principles, so that we can try to identify perhaps the unique principle and feel and flavor of the respective tradition that we're looking at. Mitch.
Mitch Allenon. You mentioned earlier that if you develop a principle to guide your behavior, and you take the high road, it's never steered you wrong. In my experience, situations arise where there are two competing principles, and picking between the two of them is very complicated.
I can't imagine where there are two competing principles. Would you like to use the microphone?
Sure.
I can't imagine where there would be a case where there would be two competing principles. By nature, a principle is a unifying force.
So in my own experience, the principle of secrecy or secrets versus anonymity. So not maintaining secrets, but maintaining anonymity.
Well, but maintaining secrecy is not a principle.
No, having no secrets.
Oh, having no secrets is a principle. Well, but I'm not sure that I actually say that that's a decent principle, having no secrets. It's a need to know thing, huh? I like transparency, but there's some things that you don't need to know.
So let me give you an example of an experience that I had. My ex-wife and I are both members of the same Al-Anon meeting. We had a conflict at the time that we were together over whether we should disclose our relationship to the group or maintain anonymity. And we fought over that greatly. And so to me, there were two competing principles about...
No, there were two competing persons.
True. Each of us maintained our own principle.
No. Or no, opinion.
Okay. You don't see the absence of secrets in an effort to become healthy as a principle, a guiding principle?
Yeah, I would say the more transparent that you are, the probably the simpler that you are, and the more authentically spiritual you are. Yeah, I'd say that,
right,
personally.
And you don't think that would conflict with... I saw it as a conflict with anonymity.
No, you have a conflict with your wife.
Well, that's true, but it sort of portrayed itself as two competing principles. You don't see it that way, though.
I don't at
okay.
all. I see the two people with an opinion.
Okay.
And they're trying to work it out in sort of a collaboration and communication, which is wonderful.
Yeah.
And you could, in the final analysis, agree to disagree.
We did.
I suspected.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you. Yeah. So the care of God is the source. The care of God, as it is in the third step, made a decision to turn our will and our life over to the care of God. The tradition has the final authority in the group, and in AA is the group conscience. God's will as manifest through the group conscience, relying on that spirit with the capital S as the source for one purpose: the general welfare of the organization, so that it can adequately and effectively deliver the message. There's a solution. You don't have to live like this anymore. You can be transformed. You can have a spiritual awakening. This is the message. And to maintain the integrity and the unity of that message, that's the reason for the traditions. So the unity is the absolute intent, all right, of the traditions. So let's go now to the language of the heart. Or any comments, any questions like we've been doing, welcome. But we're going to go now to the language of the heart. Tradition 12 is on page 92. A very little there. There's mostly on 93, and we'll wait for a minute before we turn the page, a little bit on 94. So any highlights on 92 and 93 that anybody would like to comment on? Question, comment, share an experience with.
Hi, George Barrell, alcoholic.
George.
Yeah, at the top of 93, the first paragraph, you know, it says principles come before personal interest. And, you know, we say at the meetings, we chant, or those who care to chant, principles before personalities. And this puts it a little bit in a different light, before personal interest. And again, that's humility.
Yeah, and it uses a couple terms here that we're not actually quite familiar with. I think the assignment asked us to look them up and define them, and that's self-effacement and self-renunciation. Sounds pretty monkish to me. What is it that we mean by self-effacement and self-renunciation? Anybody look up and have a definition?
I have it right here.
Please. You have to come to the mic, though. You don't have to. I strongly suggest it. Overcome your reluctance.
Walking hurts right now. Nicole, Al-Anon.
Hi, Nicole.
Self-effacement, modest, not drawing attention to oneself. Self-renunciation is the renunciation of one's will, self-sacrifice, and unselfishness.
Yeah, yeah. And so I put down self-effacement, no face. The true spirit of anonymity, to shun notice, abandon oneself. Isn't it interesting that Bill suggests on page 63 as part of the third step that we're willing to abandon ourselves utterly to God? Really? Kind of an ideal statement, right? And self-renunciation, the denial of self-seeking, no attachment to self, are the definitions that I had. And so I think it's really ironic that Nicole and I are the ones that are giving those definitions. Had to say it. Come on, there's an elephant in the room. Right. All right. Anybody else have highlights, please?
especially because Nicole has several faces.
Yeah, that's right. Highly represented in her absence.
Katie, Alcoholic Al-Anon. I really liked the way he goes through all the traditions in these paragraphs.
He gives us a wonderful recap.
Right. It reminds me of in the 12 and 12. The 12 step does the same thing.
Yes, it does.
And you go back and go, what? That's a good summary statement. That's what it is.
Yeah. Thank you for pointing that out, because I had missed it. Step 12 in the 12 and 12 does exactly the same thing. He looks back over his shoulder and gives us a recap before he continues his commentary on the 12th step and then here on the 12th tradition. We give up something for our general welfare. This is where I got that material. We listen to God. We exclude no alcoholic. We don't rely on human authority or government. And the whole purpose is to carry this message, our message. And we don't allow money, property, or personal authority, those step six obstacles, to get in our way. I love this phrase. The people who serve officially in the organizational structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, in the service structure, they hold authorizations to serve, never to govern. They hold authorizations to serve, but not authority to govern. It's a wonderful poetic contrast.
No, go ahead and finish this.
Never need to praise ourselves. He calls it the pitfall of vanity.
Richard Nortman, alcoholic.
Hey, Richard.
I've recently begun doing that in my meeting because...
Using your last name?
Using my last name, too.
Interesting. So that's a new phase for you. And what's motivated that?
Two things. One is I heard somebody else doing it, and I thought, you know, that's interesting. And I thought about, what does that do? What function does that have for us in the meeting? And I realized that, and Dr. Bob was pretty insistent that people use their full name in the meetings. And he was asked what was the purpose of that. And he said, well, how else are you going to know who they are in the phone book? Well, we don't use phone books anymore. But if someone asks, you know, do you know anybody who does a lot of step work and would be a good step guide, and they don't know my last name to refer to me, they may not be able to find me. So if I really want to be of service, I need to be named. And at the same time, I need to be anonymous. And by that I mean I need to have no name in service. I need to be without name in service. It needs to be only about the service, not about the name. I merely represent the service. I don't represent the name. I've thought about this a lot. I made coffee at the early morning meeting at the Marina Center for many, many years. When I first started making coffee there, the coffee maker was inside a room, and you couldn't see the coffee maker. They took that wall down. Now you can see the coffee maker. And when I first started doing that, man, it was great to make the coffee back there. You know, you just... Nobody knew who you were. It was just coffee. I was coffee. I wasn't Richard. I wasn't there. They took the wall down, and what I found was, and I recently quit making coffee. I gave it up. I found that I had begun to be there to be admired for my coffee, because it was good coffee.
I am the coffee man.
I am the, not only the coffee maker, but I have a special way of laying it out.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? Yeah, John notes. So I thought about this a lot.
Yeah.
And I thought about these words that you've already named, self-effacement and self-renunciation. But I found another one in the second line on page 93. to be nameless. And that's where I come to the idea that my purpose in service is to be the service and not the person.
Yeah.
The only way that service could be delivered is through a person. But I would really like to be able to make coffee without anybody knowing that it's me making coffee. And it's just the coffee. And it just shows up. Now, I've thought about this regarding the entire organization of Alcoholics Anonymous. How many of you know the name of the head of the board? How about the service committee that takes care of publications? Anybody know that name? How about the name of the Southern California Area Assembly chairman? You probably know, and you know. Because you're an associate with them, right? And you want to know their name so you can speak to that person when it's time to do so. Do the rest of us need to know? No. Because they are only service. They are not names. That's all they are for us. For me, they are just service. I find that idea fascinating. And I would like to be that nameless service. That's what I would like to be. And at the same time, how can you find me to do the work group that does the fourth step unless you know my name? This is a struggle. It really has been, it's become a spiritual struggle for me. Do I have a name? Or am I just service?
And that reinforces the concept of the message versus the messenger. But let's be really clear, and Richard has introduced us now to this topic, about how do you address yourself in the rooms of your own 12-step fellowship? The people in Akron are very clear, based on Dr. Bob's opinion, that's expressed at some length in this. For your information, page 264, Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers. As far as anonymity was concerned, we knew that we knew that we were who we were. And he says, Dr. Bob, there were two ways to break the anonymity tradition. Number one is by giving your name at the public level of press or radio. And number two is by being so anonymous that you can't be reached by other drunks, which is Richard's point. He says, we maintain anonymity at any other level is definitely a violation of this tradition. The AA who hides his identity from his fellow AA by using only a given name, meaning first name, violates the tradition, just as much as the AA who permits his name to appear in the press in connection with matters pertaining to AA. The former is maintaining his anonymity above the level of press, radio, and films, and the latter is maintaining his anonymity below the level of press, radio, and films, whereas the tradition states that we should maintain our anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. And he goes on. The point here is, Bob felt very clearly and strongly, as Richard articulated his sort of thoughtfulness about it, that in the rooms, it's incumbent on us to use first and last name. In contrast, Bill Wilson feels just the opposite. Anonymity is real humility at work. The spirit of anonymity, we try to give up our natural desires for personal distinction as AA members, both among fellow alcoholics and before the general public. There's another piece that I wanted to read. probably it's here. Oh, yeah. Anonymity was originally practiced by for reasons that had to do with the experimental nature of the society and with the prevailing stigma on alcoholism, to jeopardize the reputation and ultimately the survival of the entire fellowship. Bill concludes, the deeper purpose of anonymity was actually to keep those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. Not quite what I had in mind here. It must be in another area where he says the alcoholic... not there either. He said the alcoholic themselves are the only person to determine how anonymous you want to be. The Akron group uses first and last name. The New York culture is to use first name only. Some people use first name and last initial. When I was publishing my book, I've mentioned this before, I had conversations with General Service Office about how to represent that, and they specifically said, use your first name and your last initial. Don't go fully anonymous, but don't use your full last name. They were very clear in their recommendation. They couldn't tell me what to do, but they did give me a recommendation based on their experience. Recently, 10 years, I've been sober 30 years. Recently, the last 10 years, there's been a whole group of people that have adopted Richard's position about making sure people can find them. So in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, you'll hear people say, I'm John Smith, an alcoholic. I'm Sally Withers, I'm an alcoholic, or whatever it is, all right? I have chosen, after much thought on this, not to do that. I'm staying with what I grew up with, probably because I'm comfortable with it. And quite frankly, I've never had a problem with people finding me. Now, I'm not so anonymous, right? I'm pretty visible with the workshops, the flyers, the website, the constant contact, the email blasts, the books. I mean, I'm... You know, and I have to make sure that I have the spirit of it, or attempt to have the spirit of it, in terms of humility and anonymity. But I've done these incremental things of public awareness because, and Richard's conclusion, how else are people going to find you? So I created, I had somebody create the website for me, finally after years of struggle with it personally, because I was convinced by you all that it would be helpful. So there's a balance here, yeah. And struggle with it, pray about it, talk to your sponsor about it, experiment with it, whatever, what works for you. Now, George, please, thank you.
Hi, George Barrel, alcoholic. The last sentence in the Understanding Anonymity booklet says, experience suggests that AA members, and a couple of things, and then use last names within the fellowship, you know, especially for election of group officers.
This is on page 11 you're reading from, right?
Yes, page 11,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's a really good point.
So
this is published just after 2010, so it's really recent experience and recommendation. Please, read it again.
It says... Experience suggests that AA members use last names within the fellowship, especially for election of group officers and other service jobs.
Yeah.
I had an experience when I was fairly new. Bob was in the hospital, and I wanted to go visit Bob at Cedars. If you go to Cedars and you say, I'd like to see Bob, they ask you, what's his last name? If you don't know his last name, you can't see Bob.
Yeah. No? I mean, it is not a clear-cut thing. Absolutely. Please.
Nicole, Al-Anon.
Nicole.
So we have newcomers that come into our rooms regularly who may not understand what the principle of anonymity is just yet. And some of us, like myself, has a last name that is, if you find that last name, it's only my family. So by giving my last name, I'm not protecting the anonymity of my family. Mm. And there's only about 12 of us. So anybody can find anything on my family if I were to use my surname. Yep. So I feel like that's kind of a cross point there, yep. where the anonymity of my family is just as important as the anonymity of my group.
And thank you for the thought about that as an alternative. And going back to the pamphlet that George was reading from, Understanding Anonymity, which, as I say, was published very recently, within the last 3-4 years, there's a whole list of bullet points on page 11. Now, I'm not going to read them all. Hopefully, you either have or will. But the first one is very clear, and that's probably what I was looking for. Experience suggests that AA members respect the right of other members to maintain their own anonymity at whatever levels they wish. All right? So, and then there's more there that fills it in. Dave.
Dave Stevens, alcoholic.
Hey, Dave.
On another level, I learned early on not to be anonymous, and I'll just tell this story. I tell this story, and I haven't told this story for a long time, but when I had 40 days sober, I got backstage at a Lynyrd Skynyrd show, major rock and roll band. I'm passionate about that band ever since they opened for Charlie Daniels in 73. Well, I get backstage, I meet everybody, I'm excited. That's my God moment. That's what God did for me, got me backstage, and I met all my rock and roll heroes. Well, fast forward 5 years, and the bass player, one of the original members, was being thrown into a rehab by the band, and he called me because I was the only sober guy he knew because of me not being anonymous. And I don't run around and put my name and Alcoholics Anonymous in the same sentence. I just let him know I'm sober, I don't drink, here I am. He'd look at me because he'd invite me up to his room. Yeah. I mean, we'd established a friendship, and he'd say, "How do you do it?" And I'm an idiot. You know, all I know to say is I go to meetings, I read the book, and I got a sponsor. That's all I know to say. The man died a year and a half later, but that changed my life and my viewpoint on being anonymous. Because that's how you save lives, by letting people know what you're doing and be that example. You're the only big book somebody's going to meet.
And you know, when people make a decision as to what their level of anonymity is, we have a responsibility not to judge them, no matter what it is. If it's full disclosure of the name, all right, or whether it's to protect their surname by not using it. So it's each person's responsibility, and that needs to be respected.
Dave, and like Nicole, I've had a couple of incidents where newcomers come into the room and they do not get anonymity at all. And in fact, they're calling you out in emails and all that stuff. And so unless I know the people, I do not give my last name. But I had another question that came up just today. A friend from high school, who's now a Facebook friend, just got a milestone chip in AA, and they posted that on their Facebook page. They did not say what it was, but anybody who's familiar with the program knows what it is. What's your opinion on that?
Well, if I heard you say the facts, they did not disclose they're a member of Alcoholics Anonymous or whatever the respective 12-step group is, that in fact they have attained some abstinence with regard to an addiction that they had, and they have a chip that represents that. But they'd never disclosed that they were actually a member of any specific. So I would say they're walking a fine line, but they're probably within the letter of the law, maybe not in the spirit of the law. Because even mentioning the chip probably connotes a membership. Yeah. Okay. But it's not specific, so I would say, you know, I would say nothing.
I said congratulations, but
yeah, nice. That's good. Congratulations is a good response.
Jason, alcoholic.
Hi, Jason.
I set my Facebook page to where nobody can post anything on my page, so that's never going to happen. But anyway, I'm new to the program, and I have to use discretion on who I let know what's going on with me. Number one, I don't have a full grasp of it yet. But number two, like if I were to tell my dad what I'm doing, I would have to go through hours of defending, explaining.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's on a need-to-know basis.
It's on a need-to-know basis.
He doesn't need to know. Does it change anything?
Not at all.
Exactly.
You know, not at all. And I've got friends that are in the program.
Yeah.
Friends that have been in the program for a long time. Yeah. They have no idea that I'm in it.
There you go.
You know, so it's... Yeah. I mean, it is what it is. And people who do know me, and when they find... I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
You know, but I just... I'm not advertising it.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah.
I'm Rob G.
Hi, Rob.
Compulsive overeater. And thank you. So, yeah, so I just wanted to... I've sort of arrived at a middle ground myself, which is I'm very... I understand the reason people, I believe people tend to use just their first names in the group setting or in meetings, and I usually respect that culture as well, because even if it's a closed meeting, you really don't know who's there and if you're, you know, if your anonymity will be respected. I think that's particularly true in the SAA fellowship and those type of meetings, because there is... you know, quite a stigma and a vulnerability to being identified, you know, as a sex addict,
like
the way it used to be, perhaps, for alcoholics. However, I will say, though, although I don't use my last name in the meetings very much, when I make outreach calls to fellows, I always leave my full name to let them know, you know, it's okay for you to know who I am, and this is who I am.
All right. So,
so on a one-on-one, you know, one addict speaking to another addict, I think they should know who I am, and I have no problem.
Well, here's the question for you. So you call somebody you met, and you're leaving a voicemail, and you leave your name and whatever else.
Yeah.
Do you identify your fellowship and whatever else on the voicemail?
Well, no, it depends. Only if I know for sure that it's their personal cell phone or something.
See, that, there he anticipated where I was going with this.
Yeah.
See?
Yeah.
Be very conscious of voicemail. There are medical doctors I'm dealing with who ask my permission to call my home and leave a message from their office, because they're concerned about the HIPAA confidentiality.
Yeah.
And I got, well, when I'm doing this work, I'm going, well, yeah, when we leave a voicemail, I'm the guy he just met in AA, and his mother, his sister, his spouse, what? They may, what? You know, like Jason, very few people know. Now, if you know already that his voicemail is a confidential voicemail, then you're safe, or if you've asked their permission to do that.
Yeah.
But that's, I'm just raising consciousness about voicemail.
And, you know, I understand the inconvenience of not knowing someone's last name, because you know, between two fellowships, I have about 8 phone numbers for Daves.
Yeah.
And when they call and just say, this is Dave, and they want, you know.
Yeah, and four of them are Dave
back.
S.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, right, exactly. You know. No, no.
And just the last thing I'll say, though, is the part I've learned here, and that I have a new appreciation for, is I think the last thing you said about each member having the right to decide what their level of anonymity is.
Yeah.
So it actually has started to irk me a little. You know, it's a little kind of inside joke when someone raises their hand to pitch and they don't give a name at all.
Oh.
And inevitably someone interrupts them and says, excuse me, who are you?
Yeah.
You didn't identify yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking, what business is it of yours?
That's a I never thought of that.
This is
really
the name of the group's anonymous.
They don't have
it?
To identify their name. Yeah. They do have to identify in our fellowship, because of a closed meeting, that they're an alcoholic.
Right, right. I mean, I know someone who's been around for years, and when they tell their story, they admit that they used a fake name for the first year or two because they didn't want to be.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So what's the difference what they say, as long as they are a member, as long as they have a desire to stop?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
In Japan, people are so afraid of being stigmatized.
See, there you go.
They use fake names.
Yeah. Yeah, depending on the culture, huh?
Yeah.
Be very, very important. Richard?
I was just going to say that. I've been to Japan a couple of times, and there'd be a group, and all the Chinese guys say, oh, my name is Bill. And,
yeah.
You know, it's,
right, right.
So
yeah, yeah. Yeah, well, when I'm in Japan, I've never been there. I'm going to say my name is Sally. Or maybe Nicole. I don't know. Were you going to come up and...
Well, I really wanted to touch...
All right, you have to wait then. We're on page 94 to round out the language of the heart. Are there any highlights anybody would like to comment on or questions about that page? I just highlighted this, the 12 points of tradition. Now, he wrote this in 1948, and that's what they were called at that time, are little else than a specific application of the spirit of the 12 steps. That's where I got that comment of recovery to in our group life and to our relations with society in general. The recovery steps would make each individual AA, that is the person, whole and one with God. The 12 traditions would make us one with each other and the whole and whole with the world about us. Unity is our aim. Our traditions securely anchored in those wise precepts, charity, gratitude, humility. He goes on to say prudence. Make these virtues part of your meditation as we serve God in happy unison for so long as God may need us. He introduced a whole bunch of terms there. Charity, gratitude, prudence. Anybody look up those words and have a definition for us? Charity really actually just means love. It's a synonym for that. It's a caritas coming from cara in the Latin means heart. Gratitude, of course, is that ability to be thankful. It opens the heart. It recognizes the gift. And we've talked a lot about humility. What about your relationship with your sponsor and your relationship with your sponsees? How public should that be? How anonymous should that be? Anybody have comment, experience with that, please? Say it again.
What do you mean by public?
Did I say public?
Yeah, you said how public should that be?
Between sponsor and
sponsor. If I said it, that's what I meant then. Yeah, I can see it. Okay. I don't remember saying it, but yeah. Yeah, well, how public should it be, actually?
I hear what you're saying.
Well, wait. No, George. Public. How public should it be? In a meeting? At home? How public should it be? My relationships with my sponsor and my sponsees.
Nicole? Al-Anon. I do not share my sponsee's information with my sponsor.
That's appropriate.
So anything that they give me. Yeah. So I actually have a few points on this.
But does your sponsor know who you sponsee?
Nope.
Oh, okay. See?
Probably not.
That would be my stance. It's on a, you know, my relationship with you is our business and nobody else's. So nobody knows who my sponsees are by my telling them.
Right.
They may know because they're in groups or they're in meetings or something like that, but I don't share that information. My wife never knows who I'm meeting with. Unless, in fact, they've made a big deal out of it on the voicemail or something.
I will share in situations where it is necessary that it pertains to my own recovery.
I don't know what that means.
So if a sponsee calls with something that has affected me, and I'm not... So generally speaking, if that happens and I've gained an awareness from working with my sponsee on that, and I don't have a solution, so therefore I have to tell them I don't have experience with that, I'm going to take that to my sponsor. And I may say, I was discussing this with one of my sponsees. Yeah. That's it.
As long as you don't name them, I agree totally.
But
unless you get their permission.
But I have no problem in certain situations saying who my sponsor is.
Who your sponsor is.
Who my sponsor is.
Have you discussed that with your sponsor?
In certain situations where it is okay.
When people discuss that with me, I prefer that they don't talk about that. Especially in meetings. Especially when I'm present.
Yeah. And I think that's what certain situations are. Like, I've discussed with my sponsees who my sponsor is, but it's not like pointing the finger, that's my sponsor.
Yeah.
It's more like, this is the recovery that I'm getting and this is what it looks like.
Yeah.
And you know, so they have a grand sponsor. Basically.
Yeah.
And then the other thing that I do is
I don't like the terminology of legacy, grand sponsors and all of that business. Personally, I don't like it. It begins to establish some type of system that is very reminiscent of why Americans left England to come over here.
The other thing that I have to do is if I'm taking an if I'm taking any kind of call that is program related and I'm not alone, the very first thing I say to them when I answer the phone is, I am not alone. Is this appropriate? Do I need to step aside? And then we can proceed from there. You know, even before they can say this is so and so out of their mouth, if their name is in my phone, I will immediately, that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth is, before you keep going, I'm not alone.
And what you're saying, and I hope it's elevating our consciousness, is just be aware. Yeah, that's nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Do you want to do?
Well, I
have. We're going to the 12 and 12 now, and we're on page 184. There's four pages. Meanwhile, George is going to pass the basket.
So there's a couple points throughout here that kind of go back to the other topic, anonymity inside program versus anonymity out to the world.
Sure.
And I got a lot out of that reading through all of Tradition 12 here. And the first paragraph, I highlighted all of it. The spiritual substance of anonymity is sacrifice because AA's 12 traditions repeatedly ask us to give up personal desires for the common good. We realize that...
Let me just say, we've got a small group here. The last two meetings, I've had to dip into the pocket to make rent. It's not a lot, but I just want you to be conscious of it with the small group. Thank you.
Thank you. Tradition 7. Anyone? So, because AA's 12 traditions repeatedly ask us to give up personal desires for the common good, we realize that the sacrificial spirit, well symbolized by anonymity, is the foundation of all of them all. It is AA's proved willingness to make these sacrifices that gives people their high confidence in our future.
Yeah.
And then later on, I'm reading in here, and it says... And I'm sorry, I'm skipping to page 87.
Yeah, that's fine.
And it's the second paragraph down. It says, as this tide offering top public approval swept in, we realized that it could do us inocuable good or great harm. Everything would depend upon how it was channeled. We simply couldn't afford to take the chance of letting self-appointed members present themselves as messiahs representing AA before the whole public.
Yeah.
The promoter instinct in us might be our undoing, and anyways, on and on and on. But then it says, and then... More within this, it talked about, but we are still a message. If we keep our recovery a secret, we're not actually doing the 12th tradition. So it was like mentioned earlier, saying something to somebody gave them a phone number to call.
Yeah.
And it's I'm a little confused by that. Like,
well, I think,
inside,
I think, but part of
outside,
what you said was, and what you were reading is, it really depends on your motive. What's your motive? What's your intention? And then what is the practice? And if you have any challenges with any of that, talk to your sponsor or somebody who understands the spirit of the traditions. Yeah, thanks. So page 186 and 187 rounded out. He talks about the letter versus the spirit of the law. I really like the spirit All right. I mean, because that's really the life force. But we have to pay attention to the letter and not to get legalistic about it. Because, once again, these are guidelines, and there's nobody to reinforce it. All right. So let's see. At this altitude, page 187, press, radio, films, and television, 100% anonymity is the only possible answer, without exception. These experiences taught us that anonymity is real humility at work. It is an all-pervading spiritual quality which today keynotes AA life everywhere. Moved by the spirit of anonymity, we try to give up our natural desires for personal distinction as AA members, both among fellow alcoholics and before the general public. And here it is, that protective mantle which covers our whole society and under which we may grow and work in unity. We are sure that humility expressed by anonymity, humility, is the principle. Anonymity is the behavior, is the greatest safeguard that Alcoholics Anonymous can ever have. Very powerful stuff. All right. So let's then go to the pamphlet, the illustrated. There's so much on this material, we're certainly not going to cover it all tonight. Hopefully you've looked at the AA tradition, how it developed, because there's 15 pages in there on anonymity, and the entire pamphlet, with a little redundancy, has the most current take on anonymity, both tradition 11 and 12 kind of mushed together. Tradition 12 from the pamphlet illustrated. Anybody have any highlights either with regard to the picture or with regard to the prose?
Kim, Al-Anon.
Hi, Kim.
So let us always remember that anonymity, not taking credit for our own or other recovery or others' recovery, is humility at work. And it's been interesting to listen to this conversation tonight about the first name and the full name. And, you know, I'm still from the perspective of just the first name, based on the equality and the non-face and that. So that's where I am right now. And also, and then the separate part of that is, you know, I hear like the full name to be useful and helpful.
Yeah.
You know, and I get that. But, you know, when I was new to Al-Anon, I liked the equality of no one knowing me. It helped me kind of find my way in. And also, it also taught me that I was responsible for asking for help. So, you know, there's a lot of tools in our program, like a phone list, you know, or you can go up to a person at the end and say, hey, can I get your number? Or sure. As people who are in the program for a long time, you know, part of our services is to extending our hand to the newcomer when they come to, you know, do you need to share anything? You know, if you'd like to call me, here's my number. You know, that's still another approach without giving the full name of being useful and helpful, even in the outside world.
Sure.
You know, and that allows me in my recovery to so it is not about the person, about the name, it's about the message for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
So, and that just you know, that's humility for me
yeah.
and for the other person across
yeah.
from me. So
now our phone list at both of my men's stag meeting has certainly the first name. And then sometimes it has an initial. Mostly often it has an initial, or sometimes it has the full name. But it's how the person wanted to be recorded, with a phone number and an email.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this pamphlet concludes with the final sentence. Our principles come first, and they are not our own invention. They reflect eternal spiritual values. With this tradition, both as individuals and as a fellowship, we humbly acknowledge our dependence on a power higher than ourselves. Trust that the newcomer will find you, even if they don't know your last name. or not. You know, I don't want to. Yeah, really. All right. So there's lots of. Well, we have some time.
Katie, Alcoholic Al-Anon. I just
turn it down.
Oh.
Yeah. No. No.
Like
yeah.
This.
There.
Okay. I've been just sitting here thinking about how interesting it is because my last drunk was public. It was in the name. My name was in the paper, and the name was correctly spelled, and everything. You know what I mean? And so it was a real public humiliation. Thank God it was a number of years ago, but everybody knew. And it's very interesting that as a recovering person, 20 plus years later, I don't get to go, "Hey, look,
right.
Look how cool I am now. I'm really, really sober, right. And I'm doing good things." But it's. I learned an awful lot about humility at that point, but yeah. Even people in my home group knew about it, but I had no anonymity at that time. And so my safety place was in the meetings where I could be at one with everyone.
Yeah.
And so it was an interesting.
Be sure to read this pamphlet for any review or perhaps even spend some time in meditation about the recommendations, because this is the most current take of our experience on anonymity from the official General Service Office level. Okay, so then we looked at practice principles before personalities in all of our discussions, so I'm going to go right to, I guess, number 6, sure, and just ask for any reflections on this. We've covered some of this material. So what is your real importance in AA at work in your relationships with your family and friends? Anybody have any reflection on that they would like to comment or summarize?
Hi, George Barrell, alcoholic. You know, I've been sufficiently inculcated in the program that I see my real role as a servant to try and help people. And at work, that has really paid off because I've gotten a lot of incredible reviews on Yelp because of my orientation towards helping people. And I've also, you know, what I do is I'm an expert at what I do, sharing my expertise with people without being specific. And there are other people on site who are not expert, but who have a stake in the deal. And they are often trying to provide opinions which are not in accordance with the facts as I see them. And what I have learned to do with difficulty, because it's really hard for me to keep my mouth shut when someone is telling my client something that's not true in order to make the deal go more smoothly. And I mean, I'll tell them what I say, but I'm not going to have conflict with this other person. And that's been really hard for me.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
But I've been able to do it increasingly as a result of
integrity isn't
this.
For sissies. Exactly. No, that's great. Yeah. I love the phrase that I learned early on in human resources. We praise in public, we criticize in private. Certainly in the corporate or the employment world. But it really stands also with friends and family. Praise in public. Criticize privately, if you have to criticize.
Tell that to my kids.
Say it again.
Tell that to my kids.
Okay. Make an appointment.
Right.
So my answer to that, simply and just as a summary, is to be a conduit of the message. And I think that's what George's message was, that he learned here to be a servant of the message. And he carried that principle into work, which reminded me of Chuck C's book, New Pair of Glasses. Because all through that book, he talks about how can I help you do what you need to get done with his family, with his kids, with his work, with his employees, with his clients. How can I help you get done what you need to get done? And his whole life turned around, just like you talked about. It's magical. Well, because people then can trust you if you really have their interests at heart. And they know it. It's not just another manipulation. And they'll smell that one out very quickly.
And actually, I have another business with a partner who is very dominating and has a strong ego, and he's very sensitive to criticism. And I had a bit of an epiphany recently. We've been working together for a couple of years, and I had an epiphany recently that my job is to be of service to him. We're equal partners, and I've realized that I'm not. I mean, my job is to be of service to him and help him get done what he needs to get done, and things will work out a lot better that way. And man, that was, you know, because I know what I'm doing, you know, and don't tell me what to do, but you know.
Just like as a summary of that, like, it's a paradox, and I've been learning how to have a balance of like what my real importance is. And it's the humility is so key, because I'm these 12 traditions are helping me tremendously. I'm like in love with them, and I can't wait to continue to get in depth with them. But like in my personal religion that I grew up with, I went through like a lot of abuse, and there's a lot of ego there, a lot of people drawing attention to themselves. And my family, it's been really tough. And so what I've come to, what I've gotten out of this, is my primary purpose is their health. It's the health of my family, it's the health of my church, it's the health of AA, it's the health of people at work. And the way I can best do that is just practicing these principles and being available.
And that's also it. Protect yourself against sort of any type of evangelical movement or dogma that they want to impose and control on you.
Yes.
You see, you don't have to diminish them just because they want to convert you.
Right.
You just put up a strong, you know.
Yeah, and that's fun to do. I mean, actually, like I'll be, because there's certain people that will want to control. Like, there's a particular person that just can't. I mean, he wants me to show up to his breakfast thing and do his thing, you know, and he's building his own little kingdom for his own little ego. And I just, no.
Yeah.
You know, he's like, when are you going to come? I go, I'm probably not going to, you know.
Oh,
I
just, wow. That's
you know,
great.
I just didn't know, you know, and it feels so good. You know? It feels great.
Being that straightforward.
Yeah. And I could still be loving.
Yeah.
And I can still just
get it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can still just be there,
certainly
be loving and everything, but I don't have to do it. Yeah. I'm not going to. And I think he's finally given up, which has been great. But
absolutely.
Anyway,
no.
I really, really appreciate this workshop.
Yeah.
And I really feel that these 12 traditions are really saving me.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is, you know. Wow. So anyway, thank you.
Wonderful.
That's great.
Thank you, Jason, very much. So we looked at self-effacement and self-renunciation. Anybody have any comments or reflections on any of those words or application of them as a principle? I am, number 7.
Nicole, I'm an Al-Anon in case you don't know that yet. This one was a really good one for me because modesty, that word in general, like going back to the definition, like to look at me, you don't see modesty at all. You see a beacon of look at me, look at me, look at me, look at me. And you asked me a question a couple of days ago or a couple of workshops ago when I first came in with my hair colored, and we were talking about how I'm going to go through these phases. And that question has stuck with me. Why? You know, well, I've always been this way. I always wanted to be this way for as long as I could remember. I still don't have the answer. I still don't know why.
Yeah. Because I've always done it is not an answer.
I would agree with that.
Yeah.
And I felt that after you said that to me. But but there's also a point where there's
gently self... and kindly.
Oh, I just saw lovingly. There was no gentle or kindness there. Loving, maybe. But, you know, thank you for these workshops. Yeah. They have brought about I just don't have words, so I'm not even going to try, but I really want to thank you. And this was a good ending for me, because it's like, why do I do it? And I don't have an answer, and I don't have to have an answer. Yes. But what I get to do each morning is I get to pray to what I believe my higher power is, and just ask to go out into the world yes. as a beacon of that. Yes. And where I've seen a change now is I have certain accomplishments, as everybody, most people know at this point. I've lost over 165 pounds, not through a food program, you know, and not discrediting any of those, but I didn't need that to be successful. And there's some other things athletically that I'm making strides at, and people ask me about them, and I enjoy talking about it. But there's a point where, but the thing that's different now is I include my failures in them, because I don't necessarily balance. I balance it out. It's not necessarily a failure to me as much as it is, as it's an area of improvement that the word, so I don't get discouraged when I say I rode 30 miles with a group, but then I was dropped. And it's like, 'cause now I see that as an area of improvement for me where I only can get better from there.
Yeah.
And that's, I didn't have that before. And what I put out to the world as far as I look, now my words don't match my appearance. They don't, it isn't all about me. I stand in the grocery line and the first question I ask is, how is your day? Without any expectations to reciprocate how mine is. Because that's what I would prefer, to be the one person that goes through the line with sincerely wanting to know how their day has been. So that's what this has given me.
Thank you very much. And that sort of plays into one piece of the answer that I wrote to that is, when I get a compliment, is I first of all, I say thank you, but I try to redirect the focus to the other person, to get them to see their own gifts, contributions, and to talk about themselves. Most people like to talk about themselves, not for any neurotic reason, just because that's who we are as human beings. And they get very little opportunity to do that. Now, without manipulation or contrivance, sincerely, just turn it around and ask them, like you did, how they're doing, or what is going on, or what their holiday is going to look like, or some such thing.
I have to do that with my sponsees a lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot. I'm really glad that you said that, because the one question that I did have when doing the seventh question was, when somebody compliments me in program, you know, it's not easy for me to take a compliment of any kind. I've really learned how to do that through program, that it's just simply thank you, and I don't need to say thank you, but, or I don't need to return it with another compliment.
Right. Yeah, or ask them to spend another half hour elaborating.
No, actually, you know what? I'm very much the person that when I start getting things of praise, I actually want to walk away. Yeah. Like, I'm not comfortable because it's only just now that I can hear and agree with certain things that are being said to me. Yeah. So as narcissistic as I can be in many, many ways, that's really not one of them. That's very uncomfortable for me. And so now when somebody compliments me, it's like, they compliment me on something to do with program, I want to say thank you, but so-and-so, I got that from so-and-so, and I want to pass the compliment on to the people. And what I discovered in working this was I didn't have to do that, because now where the true gratitude is that I get to give it away now.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah,
that was fantastic.
I really maintain an effort and a consciousness to stay very vigilant to the possibility of self-deceit, though. And I do that by talking to sponsors, by talking to spiritual director, by talking to certain people in my family who love me enough to tell me the truth, knowing that it will hurt my feelings.
No name. I've been listening to this and thinking about what I said before. And what I said before is, if I don't say my name, then people can't find me. Well, how egotistical is that? You know. So I'm going to take the motto in that beautiful film, Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. And I think what I would like in my life then is if I do it, they'll come to get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, see, now, Richard just modeled, all right, reflection and discernment. He came up with a sort of a take on something, and he's been thinking about it, and he's challenged it, and he's brought it back, and he'll continue to think about it, and it'll morph, and he'll experiment. But that's exactly who we are, conscious and challenging ourselves and trying to stay with that rigorous honesty with ourselves. It's so hard. Self-deceit is so easy and so much better. Okay. So the principle for this tradition, of course, as we've talked about, is humility. The deficiency in the individual and the group that acknowledges is the pride of the individual, and humility, both as the individual and as in the group, be one of many and to be other-centered. In relating the steps to the traditions, I'd like to close with a few observations, reflections. Spirituality is a decision. I made it really clear in the step workshop. Step one confirms that we don't have the power of decision, and every step after that asks us to make a decision. It's really curious. It's a decision about our attitude. Our free will is a choice. The steps we choose, God is, we choose a relationship, we choose to do 4 through 10, and we choose to live in 11 and 12. In the traditions, we choose humility as expressed in anonymity, an altered attitude. Also, spirituality happens through transformation or awareness, which we were just talking about, that improvement in our consciousness, an improvement in our mind, that it actually thinks clearly and it thinks based on principles. The steps, we think about God. We think about God's will. We think about spiritual principles. We think about how to best align ourselves with those spiritual principles. In the traditions, we think about generating our awareness of and generating our mindfulness in the group conscience, an awareness of unity, an awareness of common welfare. What's in the best interest of my milieu, my environment, my community? Spirituality is action of the body. Notice, my model is of the human being, body, mind, and will in the steps. And I've seen the application of that same model here in the traditions. Spirituality is action of the body, our behavior and our actions. In the steps, we quit resisting and we do acts contrary to our will. In the traditions, we self-sacrifice. We sacrifice property, we sacrifice pleasure, we sacrifice prestige, we sacrifice power. The spiritual life is not a theory, it says in the big book in step, transition to step 10. The spiritual life is not a theory, we have to live it. It is about behavior. It's not about our thinking, it's not about our knowledge, it's not about our feelings, it's not about our emotions. It's about our actions, it's about our behavior. How it works, and into action, the two critical chapters on the step process. The principles guide us on this journey of our actions. They're principles that guide us on the journey. I think it's no accident that Bill uses, as I mentioned, that summary in his own autobiography in the big book. where he says, we must turn in all things to the Father of light who presides over us all. And he ends tradition 12, live in thankful contemplation. An attitude of gratitude. Live in thankful contemplation. That is presence. Contemplation is not prayer. Contemplation is not meditation. Contemplation is standing in a sacred presence, in a sacred place, on the high road to a new freedom, in the presence of, capital P. The tradition, in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. The traditions, we practice humility through anonymity, a guide for the individual in our relationships with AA, with the group, with society. Living through God in every one of those dimensions. I extended it to the concepts, although I don't intend on doing a workshop on the concepts. I have done them. And I thought, well, how do the concepts fit into this paradigm, this model? Since I see, in fact, the steps as the mechanism for the transformation of the mind, the traditions as a transformation of the body, actions, guidelines, the concepts are transformation of the will in terms of the structure, the formal structure of the organizational structure of Alcoholics Anonymous, a practice in the service of the message. The AA structure is in service of maintaining the integrity of the message and carrying the message. The AA structure is so make sure that the message is effectively carried. And I remember in the step process challenging you on page 68 when we came to the fear inventory. It says we are in the world to play the role he assigns, to turn that into a question. What role has God assigned to us? The next few words in a very dense sentence says, to the extent that we do what we think God wills is the extent that we'll have peace. So it's really important that we find out what our destiny is, what our trademark is, what our invitation is. I love that word. We are in the world to play the role he assigns as a question in the fear inventory. And I suggested that you may have an answer by the time you finish your ninth step and are practicing 10, 11, and 12. I know that was my discovery. And on page 103, maybe this is the answer. It certainly has been the answer in my life. It says in the big book, our job now is to be at the place where we can be of maximum helpfulness. It doesn't say service. I love the simplicity, maximum helpfulness to others. We shall forever live in thankful contemplation of him who presides over us all. So, I too have had a wonderful experience with this tradition workshop. It's completely pumped some new juice into my own commitment to the program and to working with you all in the workshops. And so, for those of you who will be here in January, I'll see you then. And for those of you who I don't see at that time, I know I'm going to see you. Our respective, thank you. All right, this we owe to our fellowship's future, to place our common welfare first, to keep our fellowship united, for on unity depends our lives and the lives of those to come. When anyone anywhere reaches out for help, we want the hand of our fellowship always to be there, and for that we are responsible. After a moment of silence, please join me in the prayer of St. Francis. Listen to the role of responsibility of turning, number one, and becoming a channel of the message. Listen to the message and listen to how we become a conduit of that message. Lord, Make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. So take a flyer if you're interested in any one of those multiple opportunities for spiritual growth, and have a wonderful holy holiday. Thank you. Yeah.